Our reading this morning comes from the Old Testament, from the Book of Psalms, and it's Psalm 31, which is on page 494 in the Church Bibles. And we shall read the whole psalm. Psalm 31, page 494. In you, O Lord, I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in your righteousness. Bow down your ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be my rock of refuge, a fortress of defense to save me. For you are my rock and my fortress. Therefore, for your name's sake, lead me and guide me. Pull me out of the net which they have laid secretly for me, for you are my strength. Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Lord God of truth. I have hated those who regard useless idols, but I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your mercy, for you have considered my trouble. You have known my soul in adversities, and have not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. You have set my feet in a wide place. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. My eye wastes away with grief, yes, my soul and my body. For my life is spent with grief, and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my iniquity, and my bones waste away. I am a reproach among all my enemies, but especially among my neighbours, and am repulsive to my acquaintances. Those who see me outside flee from me. I am forgotten, like a dead man, out of mind. I am like a broken vessel, for I hear the slander of many. Fear is on every side, while they take counsel together against me. They scheme to take away my life. But as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hand. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and from those who persecute me. Make your face shine upon your servant. Save me for your mercy's sake. Do not let me be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon you. Let the wicked be ashamed. Let them be silent in the grave. Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak insolent things, proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. Oh, how great is your goodness, which you have laid up for those who fear you, which you have prepared for those who trust in you, in the presence of the sons of men. You shall hide them in the secret place of your presence from the plots of man. You shall keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he has shown me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before your eyes. Nevertheless, you heard the voice of my supplications when I cried out to you. O love the Lord, all you his saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful and fully repays the proud person. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. May the Lord bless his word to us, write it upon our hearts, and give us spiritual understanding of it.
If you'd like to have the Bible open at Psalm 31, which was read to us, thank you very much, Philip. Psalm 31. I've taken as my text this morning the first phrase of verse 15, which is, "My times are in your hand." But before I start, I should make something I think clear, because I'm going to be talking about times of testing. We all have times of testing. You perhaps have had a very difficult week, or coming into times of testing. We all have times of testing, don't we? And what I want to make clear at the outset is that in God's mercy, God disciplines us, doesn't he? The Bible makes this clear. In Hebrews 12, he tells us that he chastens all his children. And if we're not chastened, it's an indication that we are not his children. Often, of course, we're chastened because of disobedience, aren't we? But that's not what we propose speaking about this morning. Not that aspect of testing and trials that we have. You see, in Peter's first epistle, chapter 1, he says, "Those who are kept by God through faith for salvation, if need be, have been grieved by various trials or tests." It's the same word, trials or tests, "that the genuineness of your faith may be found to praise, honour and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ." I believe it was Hendrickson who commented, "This refers to this at the revelation of Jesus Christ, refers to the appointed time when every eye shall see Jesus. Then all believers in heaven and on earth will sing praises and attribute honour and glory to the Son of God." So I find it amazing, I hope you do, that our trials and tests are of eternal significance. He says there, doesn't he, that trials and tests, that the genuineness of your faith may be found to praise, honour and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ, when he comes, or when he calls us to be with him, or when he comes again. That I find an encouragement. James also writes, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." Easy to forget, isn't it, when you're going through a time of testing, that we're going through those trials, knowing, he says, that the testing of your faith produces patience. Some of us sadly lack patience in such situations, but it is intended to work for our patience. So he says, let patience have its perfect work. So we obviously have some control over that, whether we do or not. He's saying, let this patience come through to you, let it get through to you. This testing is giving you patience, and that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So this surely is the work of God in the process of our sanctification, that we should have times of testing, severe testings. And I suggest it's true of all believers, that when they come through their tests and trials, their faith is strengthened. And of course, as their faith is strengthened, I believe it's true to say that their holiness grows and their sanctification becomes deeper, if that's a reasonable way of expressing it. And of course, this is all God's work, not ours. So now to our text, which is, "My times are in your hand." Verse 15 of Psalm 31. My times are in your hand. It is clear the word times means times of events, times of experiences that we have. Everything, as our brother prayed a few moments ago, everything is controlled and is in God's hands. He says, my times. And my, of course, means me, and it means you as individuals, and it means we as a corporate body of his believers here. Our times, what we're going through here in King's Langley, in various ways, any trials that come along, and we have had them, and we will expect them, are appointed by God, timed by him, so our times are in his hand. And he says, our times, we're conceived. When we're conceived, it's at God's appointed time. The time of our death has been determined. And everything in between, sickness, health, trials, blessings, all come upon us according to his plans and his timing. There's no doubt about it. That is the teaching of the Bible, isn't it? I'm sure you all believe that. Now, David in Psalm 31 is clearly being tested and tried. He says, as we read through, David prays, I'm in trouble, Lord, I'm in trouble. My eyes waste away with grief. My strength fails. My bones waste away. I'm a reproach to my acquaintances. Those who see me flee from me. I hear the slander of many. They take counsel together against me to take away my life. He was in big trouble. He says, I am in trouble. What a lot of trouble he is in there. It was affecting his health. All those things there going on in his body. What a testing he is going through in this passage. Now, of course, you will remember, as a teenager, God had tested and proved David. Proved him on the battlefield where he killed the giant with a single slingshot. He knew when he went on that battlefield that the giant's head would roll that day. His concern was for the glory of God. And he couldn't understand why the Israelites in their army were so afraid. Why they didn't accept the challenge of this. Okay, he was a big man, a giant. He could David, a little David. He wasn't a great man then, I don't think. He was a young man, probably a teenager. And there he was, prepared to stand up again. And he thought, why do they not? He said, why don't you go out and fight this man, this Philistine? This Philistine who is defying the God of Israel. Now, David had already faced a bear and a lion who tried to take one of his father's sheep that he was responsible for. He was looking after his father's sheep. And he was victorious in both of those cases. But it was in his later years that David was called upon to undergo a test that must have been one of the greatest of all his trials. Many years had passed since Goliath had been dealt with, and God moved David to write this psalm. And a number of commentators believe it was written after his son Absalom attempted to overthrow him as king. So David had been through a lot of tests. And this seems to be the sort of climax of his test of faith when his son Absalom attempted to throw his father off the throne. And of course it grieved David's heart, and it was surely a great test of his faith, because he'd been chased from his own home, he was slandered, he was persecuted, his friends and his advisers had turned against him. And at the centre of those who were plotting against him, was his son Absalom. The one who David would weep over later. We read, don't we, in that account of this event, where David cried, "O Absalom, my son, Absalom, my son, if only I had died in your place." I mean, really, they are pathetic words, aren't they? "O Absalom, if only I could have died in your place." This is how much he loved his son. What an awful experience when a son treacherously conspires against his father like that to bring about his downfall. So, briefly, David was tested. Abraham, of course, was another man of faith who was tested. Much like the trial of David's faith, in that, of course, Abraham was called of God to offer up his son Isaac, his precious son Isaac, as a sacrifice, as a burnt offering to God. And we find the account of that in Genesis chapter 22. And verse 1 it says, "Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham." But it says, "It came to pass after these things," then we come to the test of Abraham, "that God tested Abraham." After what things is he talking about here? "Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham." Surely it was after a lifelong experience of trials from God that God had appointed, decreed, or permitted to happen. He was called of God to leave Haran, wasn't he? To go to a land he had no idea where he was going. That must have been a great test of faith. When he got there, of course, there was famine there, and he had to then proceed on down to Egypt. It was quite a trial, you know, for a man who's left his hometown with all his family, all his servants. It was quite a difficult time for him, planning all that as they go, making decisions on the hoof, as we say. Very difficult for him. Then there was the time, of course, he had to send Hagar and Ishmael away from his home. He had to fight a war with an army that far outnumbered him. And many other trials too. And through them all, his faith grew stronger. As a result, I believe it is true to say that he grew holier. All leading up to that climactic test, being ready to sacrifice his son Isaac. And he was ready. He was prepared. All of those tests that he had come through enabled him to be strong. His faith was strengthened, and he was prepared, ready to take action. And he was stopped. What a great man of faith. And he had, of course, many other trials that we can't go into. Certainly there were nine quite big trials that he went through, but we can't sort of enumerate them here. So I said earlier, there is a progression in sanctification. Consider your life for a moment, your Christian life. God in his mercy promises not to allow us to be tempted, which also means tested, more than we can endure. God in his mercy promises us not to allow us to be tested more than we can endure. Over the years, as you look at your life, is it not true that the tests of your faith in your life have gradually been greater as your life has gone on? God is very merciful, I believe, and I believe when you are a young believer, there might have been tests that he put in your way, but they were to develop you. And I think those, we're all getting on in the road of life, aren't we? But if you look back, can you not see how merciful God was when we were young believers, and how many times we have been tested and tried down through the years? And even now, at your age, he can test you pretty severely, can he not? Have you not found that? There's been also been, hopefully, there has been a progression in sanctification and faith and holiness. But also, there's been a progression, I would suspect, in the strength of those trials that come along. And it's all part, of course, of his mercy Over the years, I would suspect that your faith, because of those tests, has gradually become greater as your Christian life has progressed. That's how sanctification seems to me to work. So all these tests make you stronger in faith, due only to him. He works in us. We're reminded in Ephesians 2, for we are his workmanship. He is the one who is working. Remember, we are just worthless clay pots. And if we achieve anything of good, it's for his glory and his glory alone. So all tests and trials are intended that we should become stronger. I was interested to read about some research that was done on growing trees, growing saplings from small trees, done in a greenhouse. Now, there was one group of trees that was supported by stakes. There was a second group of trees which were not supported by stakes. And there was a third set of trees not supported by stakes, but every day, for a certain amount of time, the trees were forcibly swayed back and forth every day. Now, after quite a few months, I don't know how many, the three groups of trees were measured for their growth in height and their trunk diameter. Now, the trees that were supported by staked grew quite well, quite tall. But they had very narrow, very thin trunks. The trees, which were not supported by stake, grew well, but they were intermediate in height and in trunk diameter. Say that they were sort of average type trees. The unstaked trees were waved back and forth every day, were the shortest. They may have been less impressive, but they had the greatest trunk diameter. They were the strongest. By that daily having to cope with the trials, as it were, of being shaken about every day like that. And you've observed, of course, when you've been down places in the UK, down in the West Country, for example, in windy areas, you see the trees. The trees are all growing. They've been pushed. They've been shaped by the prevailing wind, haven't they? You can see the way but they're strong trees. They don't blow over. They've grown with strong roots, strong trunks. They've grown strong. And at times of testing, you can apply it in whatever way you do, but I found it helpful. Our times of testing make us stronger. It's good to remember that when when you're in the middle of being tested and tried. So we've looked at two men some 4,000 years ago. What about us? What about us in the 21st century? We're living in a period which historians will look back on as being truly remarkable. At the end of 2019, I'm sure none of us would have dreamed we would all experience 2 years of the turmoil and the trouble of COVID-19, the small virus that went through the world, causing such turmoil. Lockdowns with worldwide suffering and death, such as none of us have ever experienced before, and in God's mercy, perhaps we shall never experience again. But again, research has shown that all people have been affected to some degree, emotionally, physically, mentally. I've mentioned to one or two of you, I think, that I read of after lockdown, when people were being called back to the office, one relatively young man in his 30s, a businessman, going to put his suit on, he just couldn't remember how to tie up his necktie. People have been seriously affected by the COVID effect. Why it happens, but this is not just dreamed up, this was a scientific report by a group of people who know about the workings of our very intricate minds. But as believers, has it affected us spiritually? How has it had an effect upon us spiritually? We have, I'm sure, taken great comfort in the knowledge that God, our God, is sovereign. He is in absolute control. Nothing takes him by surprise. Our times are in his hands. But how have you fared in all this? Have you fared well? As believers, we've all surely been tested of God in these recent years. So what can we learn from this experience, which of course is ongoing still? We're not through it, are we, completely? And when it will end, of course, is entirely in God's hands. Our times are in his hand. But you might be thinking, okay, you've just said these tests are to strengthen our faith. Well, I don't feel as if my faith has been strengthened at all. In fact, I feel it's made me very much aware of how weak and feeble I am in faith. My faith is pretty weak. If you said that, I have a degree of sympathy. I'm not saying that I actually said that, but I sympathise with it. So I do clearly have thoughts in that direction. During these times of testings, we are aware that our faith is being tested and we are weak. Now, it's not possible in the time we have, even if I were able to list every type of test that God puts us through, but there are just a few lessons I hope that we can learn. Many have been frightened by COVID, and I believe with some justification. It was a fearful thing. It is a fearful thing. Fearful disease. It's a killer. And then with the attack on Ukraine and the threat of nuclear war, which is still a very real threat, it would be surprising, would it not, if this did not make us wonder what the future held for us. We'd be odd if this didn't give us some cause for concern. Maybe you were, maybe you still are worried by these events, ongoing events. Perhaps you're still worried. But that can be a dilemma, can't it? It can be a dilemma for us, because we know we should be strong. And I've wrestled with this problem for many years. Philippians chapter 4, well-known passage. He says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. This is Paul talking to the Philippians. By prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard, and the word there is fortify, garrison your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Be anxious for nothing. Peace of God will replace that anxiety and will guard your hearts and minds. Hearts and minds. Do you know, it's a wonderful text. Glorious promise. But what if you still fear? You read that promise, you pray about it, you pray about the things that are concerning you, and you haven't got peace. You know you're a believer. If you weren't a believer, of course, you wouldn't be worried about it so much as one does worry about it in that situation. So what if you still fear? Isn't fear a sin? Well, Paul also wrote to the Corinthian church, as well as the Philippian church, and to the Corinthians he said, for indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts, inside were fears. Now, Paul didn't mess about with his words. I've taken great comfort from this. When he said he was frightened, he was full of fear, he meant it. How do we explain that? Paul gives two exhortations quite clearly. He says, be anxious for nothing. Don't worry. Have no fear. And then he tells us he had fears within. How is that to be explained? Is Paul telling one church one thing and another church another thing? Well, patently he is telling one church one thing and one church another thing. This is the dilemma. I said it raises in our hearts, doesn't it? When we read that, what's this all about? Well, I found great help from what Martin Lloyd-Jones. Now, Martin Lloyd-Jones said these statements appear, he's talking about this dilemma of these two particular verses. He says these statements appear to be mutually exclusive at first, but they are not. They are just part of the paradox of Christian life. The paradox of Christian life. He goes on to say there are many other apparent paradoxes in the Bible. He says we have to realise that Christians are not immune from what is happening around them. He goes on further to say that the absence of feelings in certain circumstances is not a recommendation of the Christian faith. And as we go through the scriptures, we see that the people of God are subject to human frailties. They know grief and sorrow. They know loneliness. They know disappointment. They know fear. Were you worried? Or are you still worried about COVID? Or Ukraine? Would you say my faith hasn't been strengthened? If so, please, I've been there. Don't beat yourself up about it. It doesn't do you any good. Don't beat yourself up about it. We should take our fears to the Lord and pray that he would help us, as we have been commanded to. But we must also bear in mind what I believe is so true, that Lloyd-Jones said, God knows we are subject to human frailties, and if you're a believer, you will be strengthened. But in his time, our times are in his hand, at his pleasure. Now, there was a lot more I was going to say about another issue, which I will not be able to because of time constraints. I will just briefly, in conclusion, when I was studying to speak on this several weeks ago, our Prime Minister announced that we were coming out of lockdown, and he said we're all in it together. There were full page advertisements in your newspaper, if you take a newspaper. We're in this together. It was a sort of mantra. We're all in the same boat. Well, we're not all in the same boat. I'd like to make I'm not making any political judgments here at all, but politicians are politicians, media is media, and they love catchphrases like this, good sound bites, and tries to convince us of their position, that we're all in this together, all in the same boat. I was going to demonstrate in a number of ways how we're not in the same boat. There is no equality. There's levelling up. We've got a minister in charge of levelling us all up. If we were all the same, all in the same boat, we wouldn't need levelling up, would we? I believe it defies logic what they say. Much of what government ministers defy logic, as far as I can see, perhaps it is political. Forgive me if that is so. But in one sense, you know, we are in the same boat. We're all in it together, all in this same boat together. In terms of our lives and our death, it is a true statement. We are all in it together. We are in the same boat. We're all born sinners, naturally enemies of God. We can't help it. That's the order of things since the fall of Adam. We're born in sin. We can do nothing about it because sinners don't have the will to do anything about it. They don't want to do anything about it. They can't do anything about it. Not only are sinners enemies of God, God is angry with them every day and will rightly judge and condemn sinners to eternal misery. So in that sense, we are all in one boat. Everyone in the world is in the same boat. But, God be praised, there is another boat Before the world was made, God determined that out of the mass of fallen, sinful humanity, he would have a countless number to worship him by changing their will so that they would be with him eternally in heaven. He is the only one we know who can do it, change people. It's a miracle of God's mercy. The remarkable thing is that all who want to be in that boat, the heavenward boat, are invited to be. And he will change them if they will only come to him and ask him to give them true repentance and faith. And he promises their life will be changed. Who in their right mind would refuse to be taken from that old boat to be put in the new boat on its way to heaven? But we would ask them, no, we would actually plead with them to seek the Lord while he may be found, to call on him in prayer and ask for mercy. And he promises that you will find him. And of course, when you have found him, you'll discover it was he who found you. He says constantly that our times are in his hand. It is time, he also says, it is your time to seek the Lord while he may be found. He says now is the time, now is the day of salvation. For those, of course, of us who are believers, our times are in his hands. Our times, our allotted days. Allotted comes from the word lot, the Latin word lot. We know what's happening to us today is our lot, isn't it? Our lot. If our current lot is a time of testing, this is how David started Psalm 31. In you, O Lord, I put my trust. When we're in a time of testing, and that is our lot, as it was David's, in you, started off by saying, in you, O Lord, I put my trust. And he finished the psalm with, be of good courage, he shall strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. Well, may we be given grace to put our trust in the Lord and be strengthened in our heart. And then we shall be able to say, in the words of a closing hymn, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to know, it is well with my soul. May it be so. Amen.